6. Over the next half hour or so, we'll be taking another chance to meet some of the most interesting guests we met on our interview program One on One over the course of the year just ended. One of the biggest events of 2005 was the commemoration of the 60th anniversary of the end of World War II. Somebody who has strong and moving memories of the war is Zuzana Ruzicova, who lost almost all of her family in the Nazi Holocaust. When I spoke to her in January, Zuzana Ruzicova recalled the horrors of the Auschwitz concentration camp.
I spent in Auschwitz almost half a year, almost 6 months, and I was at the children's home, which was something which Freddy Hirsch managed to get from the Nazis, from the SS. In that children's home, Freddy Hirsch and all the other pedagogues there tried to get the children a feeling of some normality, of not lying, of not stealing, of being honest citizens, of trying to be clean. And this was something which saved not only quite a few of the children, some of them of course were not saved, also quite a few of the pedagogues, because there was not such despair. There was some sort of not quite hope, because we knew that we would go to the gas chambers, but a sort of hope for humanity.
How did you find living day to day? Were you full of despair, or did you go about daily tasks?
Both. One had to go about daily tasks, and one was full of despair. I still am feeling very guilty because I was not managing my despair very well, so that my mother saw how afraid I was of death, and I'm regretting that very much. It must have been terrible for her. But of course one was holding on to life and seeing these fires and the chimneys every day was simply unbearable.
The remarkable Zuzana Ruzicova, who for many years has been one of Europe's leading harpsichord players. Another Czech who survived Auschwitz is Tomáš Radil, now a retired professor of psychology and neurology living in Prague. Tomáš Radil was 13 and a half when he was deported from his hometown of Parkany, now Štúrovo in Slovakia, in the spring of 1944. Most of his relatives were murdered. Only his father survived. He was one of several thousand inmates who witnessed the liberation of Auschwitz by the Red Army on January 27, 1945. Professor Radil shared his memory of that day with Rob Cameron.
27th was just a usual day. With another boy, they sent me to the gate to watch what is happening outside the camp. There was no information. And the instruction was, there are two of you, one should watch all the time, and if necessary, the second will run as a messenger to some other place and tell the story, what is happening outside. And that was in the building, to the first building to the left, the main gate, Auschwitz main camp, that Arbeit macht frei, you know. And to the left side, the first building was a building of the orchestra. There used to be an orchestra of the camp. So camp music is playing, and all those commanders are marching outside the camp that belong to the ritual. Okay, so we were just playing like little boys with those instruments. And I'm watching from the window, everywhere snow, flat place. And I see a German soldier running, I would say, metaphorically, running towards the west and pulling his rifle after him. Carrying a rifle is not easy, so he was pulling the rifle. And I even remember that the belt of that rifle was not made out of leather, but was some sort of a textile imitation You know, that guy is just, I was even a sort of a sorry for him in a sense, you know, no, not very deeply, but that was like a symbol of the breakdown of the Third Reich.
Professor Tomáš Radil. Joe Schlesinger has for decades been one of Canada's most respected journalists. Born in Czechoslovakia, he escaped the Holocaust when he was sent out of the country, though both his parents were killed. Back in Prague, and working for the Associated Press when the communists came to power in 1948, Joe Schlesinger decided it was only a matter of time before he would have to get out.
They started arresting people in the bureau, so that was the immediate impulse to leave. Whether I would have left without it, I don't know. I mean, there were a lot of people who had thought over the idea at the time but didn't do it because it was dangerous. The other thing is that I didn't have any family left. So there was nothing really to hold me in that sense. My network of friends had also disappeared, so I really had nobody. The first attempt didn't work. I paid a guy who knew his way through Bratislava to Petržalka on the other side of the Danube. We got across there and we were just about to cross over when we ran. We could see a patrol with a dog coming, so we hid and the dog didn't smell us. So we went back to town and couldn't cross that day. But I tried again in February 1950, and again we paid off somebody who knew the area, and there was a kind of a forbidden zone around the border. But somehow we had got a pass to go through to that zone, to go to České Velenice. And on the other side of the river, it's Gmünd in Austria. And I went with a girlfriend and walked along the river. This was still early on, so it wasn't as it was later on, but there were machine gun towers that we could see. And the river was frozen, and at some point we just sort of ran across the river, dropped into a ditch on the other side, and we hadn't been seen by anybody in the tower. Because even if they hadn't gunned us down, this was the Russian zone, the Soviet zone of Austria, so they could have reported to the Russians, who would have picked us up. So that was it.
Almost 40 years later, Joe Schlesinger would return to the Eastern Bloc as a foreign correspondent, in time to witness the fall of communism in his homeland, Czechoslovakia.
You know, I was there when Gorbachev came to Washington. I was with Reagan in Moscow. And I was there in 1987 when Reagan was in Berlin and made a speech about tear down that wall, Mr. Gorbachev. And I remember thinking at the time, that's not likely to happen very soon. Of course it did. And in all that time, between the time I left and the time I came back in 89, Czechoslovakia had a rough time. Finally, I was able to return and watch that era, that tyranny, the last of it vanish. It was a kind of a personal vindication.
The Czech-Canadian journalist Joe Schlesinger, who spoke to Jan Wellinger in February. If you've just joined us, you're listening to Radio Prague, where we're taking a look back at some of the best interviews we broadcast in 2005. Now, Jan Kavan is one of the most interesting and controversial figures in Czech society in recent decades. The son of a communist politician sentenced to death in a 1950s show trial, he spent many years in the UK as a leading figure in Czech emigre circles. After his return in 1989, Mr. Kavan was accused of having collaborated with the secret police, but cleared his name, and later became foreign minister and was president of the UN General Assembly. But it was his early life and family he first discussed when I met him back in May.
My mother was English, and she met my father during the war. After the war, my father was appointed to the Czechoslovak embassy in London, and therefore myself and my year younger brother, we were born in London. And in 1950, when my father was recalled by the Czech Foreign Office back to Prague, the whole family for the first time came to Czechoslovakia. And of course, from the high position of an important diplomat and a decorated soldier officer, he suddenly was accused of being a traitor and an imperialist Zionist agent, and imprisoned and sentenced first to life, and then it was commuted to 25 years imprisonment.
In those days, there weren't many foreigners here, I'm sure. Now there are lots of us. And I'm curious how your mother found adjusting to life in Czechoslovakia in the 50s?
It was extremely difficult because, as you said, foreigners are now used to Prague, and Pragers are used to seeing many foreigners. In the 50s, there were very few, and some of those who came here as wives of Czech soldiers left again when the life here became very difficult during the Stalinist 50s. And a lot of Czechs were afraid, in particular dealing with my mother, who was labeled as the imperialist British wife of a Czech traitor. So she couldn't find a job, eventually worked as a laborer in a factory, and even from that she was eventually expelled. So life was extremely difficult for her while her husband, my father, was in prison, and she had to find a living to keep me and my brother and herself alive. But she was a very strong character, and she survived. And I have still, and thanks to her sense of humor and strength, despite all the objective tough conditions of the 50s, I still have relatively warm memories of my childhood.
Jan Kavan's Social Democrat Party colleague Lubomir Zaharalek is the chairman of the Czech lower house. In May, he led a Czech delegation to North Korea in an attempt to persuade the secretive communist state to return to international talks about their nuclear weapons program. As Mr. Zaharalek told Jan Wellinger, certain aspects of their visit were distinctly Orwellian.
People on the street were not willing to communicate. It was clear that they have fear. When I saw children marching on streets and this military atmosphere in schools, it was for me something very suggestive. For example, Orwell 1984. During this rise mobilization, we saw that all people, musicians and teachers, were in the field and worked in the field, and it was said that it was something like order of Kim Jong-il, that some of musicians could return to Pyongyang to perform Smetana Ma Vlast, especially for us. It was something unbelievable, and I had got feeling that this mobilization was something which stopped also life in universities in whole capital, and it was only for me, it was something like proof that really this state doesn't work. It is something like war economy. For me, it was terrible imagination that people are living in these conditions. Fear is maybe the pillar of life in North Korea. We have commitment to help these people and try to return freedom to this country.
Lubomir Zaharalek, the chairman of the Czech Chamber of Deputies. September saw the launch of an exhibition at Prague Castle called Roma Rising, featuring black and white portraits of middle class and professional Romanies in Czech society. They were taken by the American photographer Chad Evans Wyatt, who is himself half black. Chad told Rob Cameron he was driven by a desire to draw attention to those Roma who had risen above prejudice to lead normal lives, and whom, quoting Abraham Lincoln, he describes as better angels of our nature.
I accept the notion that the photographs I did are of people who are exceptional in the sense that they have had to labor against not only the color of their skin, the prejudice of neighbors, but also the consideration even among those in the educational field who believe that Romani cannot absorb education, and have observed, they feel over time, that there is little sense of responsibility of tomorrow among the Romani. This again is analogous to a view held among whites in the U.S. 100 years ago. The blacks certainly, who danced and sang and played music and, you know, irresponsible, could not become doctors and lawyers. They have labored because they felt they must succeed. They labored against danger, against prejudice, and against even the prejudice within their own community. Let us not forget that if you rise above your group in some fashion and become a doctor, you're a thought suspect as well. So imagine these people out there alone. I find them extraordinary. Yes, better angels of our nature in that we all wish to succeed. We all wish to strive. And these people did it.
Photographer Chad Evans-Wyatt. And staying on the subject of the Czech Republic's Roma minority, Gypsy is the stage name of a Romani rapper called Radek Banga. The young musician pulls no punches. He's highly critical of both white society and Romanis themselves, and believes change can only come from within the Romani community. Here, Gypsy tells Rob Cameron why he feels he has to tell it like it is.
You know, the classic idea, when someone is trying to imagine Gypsy, he's seen a stealer, which is I'm stealing a car, or maybe I'm in a train, you know. You have to be, you know, real thief to be Gypsy. And everybody feels like that in a world. It's like, it's very average and classic view, but it's real view. And also it's true. Many Gypsies are doing this. I don't know why, it's maybe a question of time, but they do it. And I wanted to show it like, everything, like this is what I'm talking about in the beginning. It is very cold, it is very real, because it's happening. And also it's criminal, so it's bad, but also I'm able to make it funny. Many people right here and many Gypsies are trying to say, yeah, we're only good, and Gypsies are not bad, we are trying. It's not, simply it's not true, and everybody knows it, you know. I just wanted to see like, this is real. What we are, when I'm talking about my community, I'm talking about problematic community. And we know it, we know it, we know it all.
Strong words from the rapper Gypsy. Another musician we spoke to in 2005 was Michal Horáček, who is one of the Czech Republic's most prominent lyricists, though he's also known as an author, journalist, and owner of a successful chain of betting shops. When Jan Velinger met him in June, Michal Horáček recalled his youthful dream of going to America and how a bureaucrat's blind belief in stamps helped that dream come true.
You know, we had to have a special permit to even try to travel to other countries. Visa was one thing, but we also had to have a permission from our own government, you know. And this had to be applied for. And there was this Union of Socialist Youth, which was a young people on their way to the Communist Party. I wasn't a member. They refused to give me this support. So I took things literally into my own hands. My grandfather, who lived in the same apartment as our family did, he was this chairman of the Entomological Society, collected beetles. And he had this huge rubber stamp, in the middle of which there was this honeybee, you know, a big creature, all those legs and stuff. It was very difficult not to notice this creature in the rubber stamp. But I did use it anyway, and I put it on an application, and I put this rubber stamp there. And the fascinating thing is that when an official sees a rubber stamp, he doesn't think much further, you know. Well, there was this honeybee, you know, but still it was this round rubber stamp. So they gave me this permission, and off I did go to the United States, yes. All those sites that I've been reading about in New York City and Washington, Florida, San Francisco, Las Vegas, Los Angeles, you know, very, very many sites. And I ended up being invited by some ordinary family. I spent about a fortnight with them, you know, going to a local church on Sunday, you know, and stuff like that. Something that I would have no opportunity to really see. So it was very, very important for me.
Michal Horáček. And finally, Father Piotr Krzysztofiak is a Polish priest who's been living here for almost a decade. The prior of Prague's Dominican monastery, he's also parish priest at St. Giles' Church in the city centre. He's one of a growing number of Polish priests serving in the Czech Republic, where there has been a distinct shortage of vocations in recent years.
There is a great gap of almost 40 years when it was practically forbidden to accept new vocation and to form new Dominicans, new members of the different religious orders, or even diocesan priests. We know that there was one seminary in Litoměřice, but it was not enough. It was controlled by communists. It was not enough. Of course, the religion was repressed and believers were persecuted. That is the reason why here in Czech Republic there is a great number of very old fathers, very old priests. There is the lack of middle generation of the priests. And of course, there are some new vocations, but not a lot. They are very few. In Poland, there is exceptional number of vocations. So that's quite natural that bishop from Czech Republic asked the Polish bishops if they could send some priests and they could come. It is very often we say that Saint Wojciech came from Czech to Poland to bring the faith. And now there is the time to, you know, to repay that benefit.
Father Piotr Krzysztofiak, who I met last March. That brings us to the end of this special look back at the best of one-on-one in 2005.